Text number 7, page 18. Mayaya ramamanasya naviyogas tayasaha. Atmana ramayare me tyakvakalam sushikshaya. Mayaya, with the illusory energy, aramamanasya, of him who never consorts. Not viyogaha, complete separation, taya, her, saha, from, atmana, with his own, ramaya, spiritual potency, rama, reme, consorts, tekvakalam, by casting his glance in the shape of sending his time energy, sushikshaya, with the desire to create. Translation, Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy, still her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy, then the shape of sending his time energy is an auxiliary activity. Purport, the illusory energy has no direct contact with Krishna, but has got indirect contact. Vishnu, the prime cause, lying in the causal ocean, the plenary portion of Mahasankarshan, who has his seat in Mahabaikuntha, the sphere of Krishna's own extended transcendental pastimes, casts his glance toward the deluding energy. Even in casting his glance, he has no contact with the deluding energy because the spiritual chit potency, Rama, then carries the function of his glance as his unpolluted, ever-submissive potency. The deluding energy as the maidservant of the spiritual chit potency Rama serves the manifested plenary portion of Godhead consorted with Rama, the time energy representing the force of activity and instrumentality of Rama. Hence, there is found the process of masculinity or the creative force. Comments?
These verses are very important. And Hridayananda Maharaj was giving a class in Orlando recently that I saw on the internet where he talked about his thesis was that the attitude that a culture has with nature has a big effect on the way people live. He talked about how as some part of his academic work, he had to study some scriptures relating to how to build a Vedic temple. And, how you have to go cut down a tree. And before you cut down a tree, you have to tell the tree, that I have no more right to live than you do. And not only am I taking you for this purpose, but also I'm destroying the home for so many birds and insects and other things, this whole sort of environment. And so you have to apologize and explain what you're doing this purpose. And so it's our understanding of how, of what material nature is and how we relate to nature and how nature is related to God, even though being material nature means it's not related to God, but yet it is related indirectly. And this whole understanding affects the whole way a civilization develops and a civilization's attitude toward nature if it becomes something like our civilization, which thinks we can just exploit nature, throw things in the, just throw away our candy wrappers in the pond or whatever, without any thought to anything, it becomes very detrimental for society and how we relate to society. But this is very, esoteric. Exactly, what is Shiva and what is how it is that the chit potency, that is Lakshmi, the internal potency, carries the glance of Vishnu, and the glance itself is very complicated. How it is that the time energy in the form of the glance is becomes the masculine principle of creation, which is Lord Shiva, which is through the faculty of perverted cognition by his interaction with the material nature, who is the shadow of Krishna, not the is the darkness of those who want to turn their back on Krishna. This very high philosophy, high, interesting, and a complex relationship. And it's important that we understand it correctly, and that some of our even a little misunderstanding of this in Christianity or Islam or Judaism, according to Hridayananda Maharaj, results in this attitude where they think that God cannot manifest himself through a deity, for example. And that attitude itself, that very strong attitude against deity worship and against the idea that God can manifest himself in nature, which is an idea associated with paganism that has to be repressed and everything, has resulted in a civilization that has, according to Maharaj, a very strange relationship with nature, a very exploitative relationship with nature that's very harmful to people.
Really nice. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any more points?
Just to continue on with that thought, there's a nice quote here from Einstein and from Stephen Hawking. Einstein says, "There's a perfect brain behind all the natural physical laws." That's a borrowed quote. And then Stephen Hawking says, "Either we have failed to see 99% of the universe, or we are wrong about how the universe began." So that's an interesting point, how the other religions don't see how God manifests in nature personally. I have a question about this. So this is Mahavishnu glancing, right, at Maya. That means Maya is already created by him. So how can something that directly comes from Vishnu be indirectly related? How's my fingernail not directly related to my hand? So, can you answer that?
Well, I didn't exactly understand the question. Maybe
so. It's saying here that Maya doesn't touch Mahavishnu, and that is indirectly related to Mahavishnu. But yet, she must directly come from Vishnu, otherwise, because everything comes from Vishnu. So, how can anything be indirectly related to Vishnu? Because everything comes from Vishnu, and now he's glancing at her, but she's already created. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to glance at.
Well, it's explaining here that he does it indirectly through a different agent, and when he's glancing, actually, there's a transformation of his glance in the form of Shambhu, who enters into who's instrumental in the process of getting everything going, and therefore he's walking a fine line. It's speaking about it's direct but indirect at the same time. In fact, that's what the language is.
So indirectly, he's looking at her.
Yeah, because he doesn't have full interest in that energy. It's his external potency. It's being created for a purpose, which is to give facility to the Bodhijiva to come back to Godhead. So it's not his primary interest. So he doesn't have full contact with it like he does in the spiritual world. It's a matter of his, it's in a practical way when somebody has a relationship with you, but they're not very interested in you. And those, maybe you have a legal connection with somebody, like say if you have a son, buddy, or say a wife, and she leaves you or something, runs away, and doesn't want anything to do with you, but you're still paying the what do you call that? Alimony? You still pay the check, But she's, you've made an agreement with the court that, she doesn't want to see you anymore, but, out of goodwill, you're still paying the thing. So you have an indirect connection, but because the person doesn't want to see you, you sort of stay out of sight, out of mind. That the idea of the Bodhijiva is that Ishara Petasya Vipari Yosmiti, he's turned his consciousness away from God and therefore he doesn't want to see him. So Krishna makes that arrangement. Sarvasya chaham radhi sannivishto matakshmitya jnanam apovanam cha. He gives them apovanam, and that's the theme of the material world. There's these coverings which allow the living entity to keep his consciousness absorbed otherwise. So how interested are you in somebody who doesn't have interest, who's not interested in you? How interested in somebody are you who doesn't have interest in you? So Krishna's sort of indirectly connected with the material world because of the consciousness in a practical sense. And how the mechanics of it all works, as Akurnath Prabhu was saying, that by the glance, then some other agents are employed coming in the material world. That requires an IT degree.
You know, one thing is that, you know, God exists with these three potencies, internal, external, and marginal, always. And that's a little beyond our ability to conceive. When we think of things in terms of cause and effect, we're dealing with something that's, you know, we're trying to apply a material conception to something that really exists. But the next verse talks about how does Maya make her appearance as the accommodating potency. She makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix, the internal potency. So all these, you know, so she's like the, you know, in that sense, they're always existing, but then the mechanism of it is being explained in this way that, like we have this idea of Vishnu, Mahavishnu is lying in the causal ocean, but you know, where did the causal ocean come from also? We know the Garbhadak ocean comes from the perspiration of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. You know, so how these things are all being explained is very perfect, you know, and yet, you know, it's really there that Maya exists as a, because, you know, Ritair tang yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani, everything really is connected to Krishna, and when we see it in connection to Krishna, we cease to be in Maya, basically. But then there has to be a place to accommodate the faculty of perverted cognition of those who are rebellious, who don't want a relationship with Krishna, and he, you know, can create that reflection which appears to be in darkness through this process of creation that we're studying.
Thanks. All right. More?
I don't understand the basic idea here. So if you could please explain just what's the high-level concept. I don't get it.
That is that Krishna has three energies. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Shetra Gyakya Tata Para Avidya Karma Sam Gyanya Tritiya Shakti Rishite. They're described in the Vishnu Purana. That Krishna has his internal potency, and that he also has the potency of the living entities. And then there's the external energy. And within the external energy, that's characterized by fruitive activity, the mentality of trying to enjoy separately from God. And just as in the city of San Jose, if we look out the window long enough, we'll see there's police cars driving by. And if we follow them, we'll see they go to a police station and then there's a jail somewhere. We're not really conscious of it so much because we're not breaking the law. But in every society, doesn't matter where you go, you'll find police cars or their equivalent and the police station, because there's a certain section of the population that are scofflaws, and they go against the regulations, and therefore it's required for a normal operation of society for them to have a facility. They have to be taken care of also for some kind of reformation. So material world is a tiny portion of the spiritual world, which is separated, just as the whole correctional system is a part of society, only it's separated. They're like over there, across that fence or wall, you find the correctional facility. So Krishna makes facility for the Baddha Jivas, or those Jivas who are inclined towards attraction to matter, because they can be attracted either way, towards the spiritual energy or the material energy. And those who, since time immemorial, since anadi, since beginningless time, have been attracted to matter, are described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohina parata. They have a rebellious spirit. It's partly due to misuse of their might and independence, because they're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna has unlimited independence. He does as he likes at any time. He's swatantra. And the jiva, who is a part of him, he has that same tendency, because he's just like Krishna, only he's tiny. He's chitkana. So when he misuses his independence, then he gets into trouble. He gets entangled by fruit of activity. So Krishna makes facility for such Baddha Jivas, giving them the material world as a place for to act out their misused minute independence, and at the same time gives them an opportunity for reformation. So what's being described here is the process by which Krishna is making that facility, and it's cyclical. Because, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, bhutva bhutva praliyate, everything in the material world, although it's eternal, it comes in cycles. It's manifested sometimes and unmanifested at other times. So in the beginning of the Brahma Samhita, there's a description of Krishna's impetus for manifesting the material world and the mechanics of how he does it to give facility to the jivas, who are entangled here eternally. And then, of course, that includes his agenda for rescuing them from the material world through, as many of the verses, ananda chinmaya rasat matayam anasuya praninam pratibalam smarutam upetya lilayatena bhuvanani jayat yajastram govindamadi purusham dhamahamajami. He comes himself and he manifests his lila, and because of that, living entities can become reattracted to him and then go to the spiritual world, which is in their interest. In the material world's like a child who runs away from home, and then he gets taken in by bad foster parents who abuse him. So that's what our stay in the material world's like, you know, going away from Krishna, making a wrong choice. And when we become rectified, it glorifies Krishna, because it's, you know, the soul coming back to Godhead. It's a big event. It's a glorious thing to become freed and rectified. So this is, you know, many of the our shastras, like the Srimad Bhagavatam, in many of the cantos, there's a description of creation. What is creation, how it takes place, why it takes place. Srimad Bhagavatam explains it in his prayers. Prahlad Maharaj goes through the process briefly and explains it. It's important to understand. This is called sambandha gyan, or knowledge of our relationship, where we are, who we are, and what our real interest is. Once we know those things, we become enlivened and going in the proper direction. Like some people, they become, you know, in our regular life, if they become disoriented as to what is their goal in life. You know, sometimes kids growing up, they don't know who they are, why they exist, what their goal in life is. They don't have any motivation, so they just languish. So the soul, without this knowledge, without understanding how we got here, what the difference is between the material energy and the spiritual energy, and what his real interest is, and then having some knowledge of how to actually go there, languishes. But once he gets that knowledge, he's compared by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be like a poor man who's suffering because of his penury. And he meets an astrologer, and the astrologer tells him, I'll do your chart. And once he looks at it, he said, wait a minute, you're not poor, you're rich. Your father was the wealthiest man, and he left you a treasure. And I even know where it is. I can show you. You just have to go there and get it. So Mahaprabhu explains that this is the living entity who's forgotten that actually he's not matter, which is perishable, and through his combination with matter, he adopts the mentality that I'm a temporary being, I have to die. And once he wakes up through Sambandha Gyan, he gets this knowledge from the astrologer, from the Shastra, from the spiritual teacher, that I'm actually have nothing to do with this world. And a great burden is lifted, and he becomes wealthy. The prayers personified Veda said, give a similar example, and they say just like a poor man, he's suffering, begging, and then someone comes along and says, what's that around your neck? And he said, what? That. It's a valuable jewel. Inestimable value around your neck. And all the time you're begging for scraps, but you really are the wealthiest person. So, we're getting oriented. Looking towards the Orient and getting oriented to who we are and what our goal in life is. So in meticulous detail, it's given in Brahma Samhita of what the material world is, how it's created and so forth, and how Krishna has a personal hand in it. It's not some impersonal thing. People speculate all the time, and they're lost in this conception that it all just happened by chance. There's no meaning to it all. We're just floating here, and how can there be any happiness or peace in that without knowing actually who the real purpose of it? Then we simply suffer. More? Johnny.
I was thinking about, Sachdev read something by this guy, Stephen Hawking, and he's a physicist that works in a field called cosmology. And cosmology is the study of, how the universe began and the big sort of underlying metaphysical questions. It's not really, although that, the modern trend, like people like Hawking are trying to apply the knowledge of modern physics and, gravity and electromagnetism and wave theory and light and stuff like that to try to understand the origins of the universe. It's traditionally a field that's more akin to philosophy than is to empirical science. People start wondering, what are the original things? How does the world that we can see, come about somehow from the beginning? And this Brahma Samhita also, and Srimad Bhagavatam also gives an alternate approach to cosmology. That is, what is the origin of the universe? And it's one that's very related to, looking inward, understanding our own psyches, how we are illusioned, and how we are, how things become clear to us. We are affected by different modes of nature that also affect the way our mind works and the way our psyches work. Cosmology of Brahma Samhita is a very profound and advanced cosmology, but unfortunately, I don't think that people like Stephen Hawking they should get an opportunity to really understand and appreciate how sophisticated this personal cosmology, the idea of the relationship of material nature, that is the illusion, the faculty of perverted cognition, its relationship to the supreme absolute truth that exists. I would hope they would appreciate it.
Well, you're very kind and merciful, Akurna, to want them to have that opportunity. And, by your desire, they'll probably get it. Because really, Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Pritagyana, how there are very intelligent people who misunderstand everything because their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And when it comes down to it, there's no this avaroha panta, which is ascending process, trying to reach up and get it with one's own intelligence, is another way of trying to control things. In material life, just being a karmi, that is trying to exploit material nature, exploiting material nature and taking the fruit of it. It's really like really gross misuse, kind of like a thief, a robber. He goes around with a gun and just steals things from people, breaks in their houses and takes it. That's basically, being a karmi. And then there's the gyanis, and they're more like, white-collar crime. They don't steal with a gun, but, they know how to manipulate and, change the code a little bit. And so it's the same thing. They're getting knowledge, but they're using it to exploit. There's still an exploitative mentality. So when they get the knowledge, what are they getting it for? Why do they want to enhance their intelligence and understand all these things? It's still exploitative mentality, and therefore there's no access. This is part of what's being described in the very first part of the Brahma Samhita, of how fortified is the realm of the spiritual world. Outside there's all these tridents and living entities keeping out these kinds of insincere people. The only process ultimately is to take descending knowledge. When one's Bahunam jamanamante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. Unless one comes to the end of this exploitative feeling and realizes there's no use in it and surrenders to Krishna, seeing that he's everything, then one can't actually get real knowledge or proper position in life. It still has to rotate within the confines of the material world. But by the goodwill of devotees, such people can get some agyata sukriti just by their goodwill. And that really is, as explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's really how one starts one's inquiry in a sincere way, is one gets the will of a devotee, the goodwill of a devotee, and gets some contact in that way. Even unknowingly, he gets agyata sukriti and then is able to accumulate some kind of shraddha and then start the process. Otherwise, they go on forever designing all kinds of philosophies and everything like that, but the main purpose is to show how there's no God and how I can go on exploiting and trying to enjoy the material world. Prabhupada was so pragmatic when discussing these things too, because when devotees would bring forth things like, such and such is these scientists, they're learning how to replace different organs, and in the future they'll be able to, continue life. And Prabhupada said, yes, but the one who's inventing, he will die. Why doesn't he worry about himself? Why? Well, if it's for posterity's sake, Prabhupada said, yeah, but he will die, So there's this ongoing promise from this side of material science, that will make things better, but right now you still have to suffer and die. Never gets better. Go Premanande Haribol.